The views, opinions, and beliefs expressed on this radio program by the hosts, co-hosts, guests, and or callers do not necessarily reflect those of this radio station and its ownership. The following program, Golfers on Golf, is paid for by Rory Spears Sports Communications Limited and guests.
Welcome to Golfers on Golf Radio, hosted by Ed Stevenson, Bill Berger, Rory Spears, and Len Zien, Chicago's favorite foursome.
All right. Happy Saturday. Thanks for joining us. The show's Golfers on Golf Radio. We're going to spend the next hour bringing you the world of golf from a Chicago area perspective. And hey, it's the heart of the season, guys. This is the time of year we all wait for. And it's been pretty hot this week. Finally, a little bit cooler this weekend. And I'm sure anyone who's teeing it up will appreciate that. We thank you for teeing it up with us here on the airways of WNDZ. In studio this morning, I'm Ed Stevenson, a PGA professional with the Forest Preserve District of DuPage County. Alongside me is longtime Chicago area journalist Rory Spears. We have PGA Life member and former touring professional Bill Berger here in studio as well. And the Illinois Golf Hall of Famer, longtime journalist Len Zien is on the phone line. And fellas, let's jump right into it. Rory, I know you've been spending some time following the local tournament scene. Of course, we actually have an event here in town this week. They had a hot start in more ways than one, but why don't you fill us in?
Well, the NB5 Invitational is underway at the Glen Club, and the scores were super low on round one. I believe there was a 60 that was shot out there, a 61.
Yeah, that's a low score.
And there was guys five under par that were in like 17th place or something like that. So whether it was the conditions or they toughened it up a little bit, the scores not quite as good yesterday, but nonetheless, there should be some exciting golf going on out at the Glen Club today and tomorrow. Also, there is tournaments in town next week. The Illinois Open for the men is Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at Flossmoor Golf Club. Later in the week, we'll see the Western Amateur teeing off at North Shore. And last week, the Illinois Women's Open, congratulations to Grace Curran, who will play at Minnesota from New Lenox. She was the winner there. And, you know, one thing that was stumping some of us media types, teaching pro at Mistwood, Nicole Giray was not there, was supposed to be in the field, wasn't there. Nobody had
home course, right?
Yeah, but we understand from Andy Michelson, the director of golf, who's going to join us here live next week, that Nicole went out and played in a, I think, PGA of America teaching professional event. Took second place out at a golf course in Virginia, and understand the purse was much larger. So congratulations to Nicole Giray on a stellar week on the golf course out in the state of Virginia. But a lot of things going on. We're going to hear from IPGA Executive Director Carrie Williams during the show today. She will also join us live next week. In addition, Brad Slocum, the championship director, who's setting up the golf course at Flossmoor for this week, he's got some interesting things to say. Our club pros and those amateurs that get in the field this week may have their work cut out for them. So be ready for a challenge at Flossmoor. The course isn't 7,000 yards, but it's not going to play real easy. I will tell you that. And also, the announcements came out about the Illinois Golf Hall of Fame. So plenty to talk about here this week. Right, Len Zien? You always love talking about the Illinois Golf Hall of Fame.
Always got a lot to say. Very good. That's an interesting class, by the way, this year. They have a lot of diversity in this class. I'm really quite I'm impressed by the ones. There's a couple who I thought would be of the finalists who would get in, and they didn't make it. But it's always an interesting day after the people are announced for that Hall of Fame, and this was a particularly interesting one.
Len, it was, I believe, the voting took place. The committee gathered, Tuesday night in a meeting to try to finalize things. And I think the announcement came out pretty quickly on Wednesday. But it's a class of six this year. Margaret Abbott Dunn, the first American woman to win an Olympic competition. Let's see, we've got Harry Collis, who's closely associated with Flossmoor. And Harry was a player, he was a professional, he was an architect, he was a superintendent. Sounds like he was truly a Renaissance guy and did it all over 40 years. Randy Kane, nicknamed the Doctor for his attention to turf quality in the Chicago area and Chicago District's courses. So you're right, Len. Some of the, I think, diversity of skill sets and involvement in the game of golf. It's not just tournament players. We do have Tim O'Neill, a PGA member, who, like his mentor, Bill Ogden before him, Tim had really shaped the career of many, many assistants. A lot of the names that we know here in Illinois as some of the most successful golf professionals that have helped people enjoy the game. Tim O'Neill's been involved in so many things. Bruce Patterson is a name that I think a lot of people recognize. He was Professional of the Year twice, and he's been really involved in the Illinois PGA Foundation. But a lot of people truly know him from the long, long span of time he spent as the director of golf at Butler National Golf Club. So last but not least, Dave Ryan, who is from Taylorville and has a pretty incredible resume as an amateur golfer. Four times he won the Illinois Senior Amateur event and quite an accomplished player. So I know we'll learn a lot more about these inductees in the months ahead, and looking forward to the induction ceremony. And Len, it feels your own induction when you were brought in. It feels like not that long ago, but the years passed by quickly.
Boy, they sure do. Mike was in the class of 2019, and we had six, but only two of us were, Emo Esposito and I were on hand. The others had passed on, most notably Carol Mann, who had died just very close to the selection process. But this particular class, you know, the first two that you named that are the ones that were a surprise to me. Dunn, the woman who won an Olympic medal, that's a name that came out of nowhere for me. I remember the best, according to my studies of history, Bessie Anthony, who has made the Hall of Fame, was the predominant Chicago area woman player back in that era. Collis at Flossmoor, very active in the programs at Flossmoor in all kinds of categories. So kind of a jack of all trades guy. I know the name, but I can't say that, those are players long before I was alive, actually, but they were kind of surprising. I think that, Tim O'Neill and Bruce Patterson, they were veteran, contributed a lot as club professionals here. So, they were good selections. Dave Ryan's record, of course, is, very impressive in the senior ranks, and Dr. Kane has done tons of things as the first director of turf grass for the CDGA. So, you know, it's an interesting class. It'll be interesting. They have the ceremony in November this year, and I think that we'll learn, as we say, as we get closer and closer, we'll get the details on all these people's careers. But they're a unique bunch. I don't remember that ever being such variety in the Hall of Fame selections.
Yeah, well, it's always a nice event to celebrate the accomplishments of the individuals, but I think really the way it gets put together, the research that's done, the videos that get put together, and our friend Tim Cronin does such a nice job as MC of the event. Not only do we get to celebrate these individuals, but I think we get to reconnect with a lot of our Illinois history. Some of which, is otherwise at risk of getting lost along the way. So, always interesting to see how the process goes. Nice to welcome a new class and something to look forward to coming up in November. So, Billy, I know the few names there that you probably recognize and know personally from over the years as well.
You know, of course, you know, Ogden's automatic, and everybody, I know when I came here from out of state, everybody wanted to work for Ogden because put a couple of years in with Ogden, you always got a lead
on
the
job. You got a good job after
you
that, after working
got
for
a good,
Bill Ogden.
Good job with Bill Ogden. And I knew O'Neill. I knew him more at Park Ridge when he was at Park Ridge, and he kind of followed in his footsteps. He put out a lot of good assistants.
Well, it proves what you're saying, Bill. You know, here we see Tim O'Neill from an apprentice of Ogden all the way to joining our own Len Ziem in the Hall of Fame.
So. You know, how I arrived in Illinois was because of a guy that worked with Ogden, Jack Bell, yeah. Who wound up being the pro at Nedina, and that's how I landed in Illinois. It's always
interesting to follow the family trees, if you will, of the Illinois golf professionals, it's pretty connected lineage at a lot of these clubs that we know so well.
Well, it is 10:11. You're listening to Golfers on Golf Radio, and one of the things that is great about golf these days, it's the opportunity to find out which equipment is best for you and which specifics, perhaps, what loft, all sorts of different things you should do with equipment. And I know there's some misperceptions about club fitting out there that either it costs too much or you shouldn't do it in the middle of the summer because you're out there playing a lot. You don't want to be changing equipment. Well, somebody who's got all the details, the information on what you should know when it comes to club fitting is a recent winner of yet another national award for being one of the top 100 fitting facilities in America. And joining us live from the Misswood Golf Club, it's Matt Carter. Matt, how are you this morning?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Yeah, we're all good. And Matt, you know, with hot weather this week, there's still been a lot of people out there playing golf. And you know what? But there's a lot of people as now we get towards the end of July and we start to head to August that in some cases the frustration is setting in a little bit. You ask people about their game. They say, well, I'm hitting it sideways. And I know one of the things that you do at Misswood with your co-worker Eric Russell out there is get people straightened out, get them some distance, and put the right equipment in their golf bag. And that's through the art of club fitting. And Matt, tell us a little bit about club fitting, because I know there's some misconceptions out there, but in my opinion, it's never a bad time to look at upgrading your equipment, especially if it's got a few years of use on it.
Yeah, absolutely. excuse me there. Having the right equipment definitely makes a difference. Everything from like making sure your lie angles are correct, that's going to have a influence on the direction your shots are going. You know, if you're playing stuff, you know, bought off the rack, you know, it's going to be standard length, standard lie, and you know, a lot of players need clubs that are maybe a little longer, maybe a little shorter, maybe lie angles that are tweaked 1 or 2 degrees to hit those better golf shots that we're all seeking. And then you got shaft flex, which is very important too. You want to, you know, make sure you have shafts that aren't too stiff for you, and also ones that aren't too soft for you, because that can definitely influence your direction and just how the club feels in general. So there's a lot that goes into it, and you know, the cool thing with club fitting now is, you know, we get to use some really cool technology to see exactly how you're applying the golf club to the ball, and then we can back up the results with, you know, we can actually see what your ball flight is out here at Misswood, and actually compare that to the data that we're seeing on the TV screen when we, you know, have you hooked up to on the TrackMan. So,
well, Matt, it's an interesting point about always surprising the number of golfers, of people who will put a lot of time and energy into their game, who've bought clubs, you know, off the rack. I think even a casual runner, if we look at a different sport, or even a competitive runner, would never go and just buy a shoe right, without considering the size and other aspects of the shoe that they're going to go and try to perform in. And yet in golf, really over the decades, plenty of people have been willing to buy a set of clubs without the same consideration. You mentioned timing a little bit. I know certainly some of the golfers I know are very eager to maybe get a fitting early in the year. They want to start their season. They're contemplating some new equipment. And unless they've been taking advantage of indoor opportunities at a place like the Mistwood Golf Dome and really repeating their movement and having a swing that that they've worked on throughout the winter, they're coming out of the winter maybe with a little rust on and may come to a club fitter like you and they don't have a swing where they're repeating the same motion every time. They might look at this time of year and wonder, well, gosh, it's late in the season. Should I wait till next year? This might actually be a pretty good time of year to consider club fitting if someone's been playing and now has a move they're repeating that you can fit to. Is there a better time of year for getting a club fitting, or from your perspective, Matt, or does it not really matter?
I think having some consistency in your swing, I think you're going to get a better fit from that standpoint. We still do a lot of fittings in the wintertime, and that's fine. I know from my personal experience, actually seeing my numbers in the wintertime in the dome versus like right now, I know I swing the club a little bit faster at this time of year, which, obviously that I'm going to get little different spin numbers, different launch. My ball speed is obviously going to be different. I definitely feel I strike the ball more solidly at this time of year, being I've had a few rounds of golf in, or maybe I've had a lesson or two with one of the other instructors here at Mistwood. So I always say, sometimes that question comes up, we get a newer golfer and they're like, well, what do you recommend first? Should I take lessons first, or should I do a club fitting first?
Right.
And our answer is typically, I would prefer to get you a couple lessons first. Because I do feel that the more consistent your swing is, and maybe that consistent swing is maybe it's a 20 yard cut, but it's like I can fit you for a club that's going to help you with that, versus if you come in and one shot you hit off to the right and the next one is you hit it thin and then the next one you hit it to the left, like that's a much tougher fitting than for the player that has just a consistent ball flight. We fit a wide range of handicaps. We fully understand that everybody that comes through our door is going to be tour caliber. Like, it's just the nature of this game. And if there is a consistency to your swing, I think you're going to get a little better result. Now, if you in the wintertime, if you hit balls and you go to one of the winter facilities and you continue to work on your game, then coming in and getting fit at that time of year would be fine as well. So
10:18, you're listening to Golfers on Golf Radio. I'm Rory Spears with Ed Stevenson and Bill Berger in studio. Len Ziem is with us from the Palm Air Studios in beautiful Sarasota, Florida. And we're talking club fitting for a few minutes with Matt Carter out at the Mistwood Golf Club for the summer. Matt's, of course, always available for club fitting at the Mistwood Golf Dome in the winter. And, Matt, one of the things I believe in the industry that's changed is we always saw all the new equipment come out at the PGA show in January, and if you wanted to test out the new stuff, you did so in February and March. But I'd say over the last 4 or 5 years or so, companies are not shy of putting out both new golf clubs and new golf balls at pretty much any time of the year. And as a result, there might be some new things to test, even in the heat of summer. Fill us in on that a little bit.
Yeah, you're right. A few years back, everybody came out with their new equipment early in the spring. But now, Titleist right now, they have a new iron introduction coming to market. I know there's been some photos online, and we've been getting calls about it probably for the last month or two. We recently just got our head, so they have an all new line of Titleist T series irons. So they have their new T100, T150. T200 and T350 irons. So those are coming to market. I believe those will be hitting the shelves towards the end of August. So we're about a month away from that, but we are currently fitting for the new clubs. We just recently got our fitting heads. It's cool to see that though, because it creates a little buzz in the golf industry, as we get into the later summer months, and it kind of keeps, keeps the flow of fittings, you know, more consistent throughout the year. So, but yeah, it looks like they have a pretty interesting product. I know it looks like TaylorMade also is going to have a new introduction. They have a revised P790 coming out here pretty soon. It'll be launching, I believe it's about the same time that the Titleist irons are. And I haven't really heard too much from Callaway, but there may be a introduction from them as well, with maybe a new iron model. But I haven't seen any pictures or heard any anything about that. But there may be maybe a new iron from them as well. So, but yeah, it's great to see products coming out year round, and it just keeps the flow of fittings kind of consistent throughout the year.
Well, Len Zeem, is there any age on the weapons in your bag, and what do you got for Matt Carter?
Well, mine are pretty new, and I'm going to have a couple additions to it before the season really gets going here in Florida. But I have to be somewhat embarrassed. Not embarrassed, but I was initially, years back, very skeptical about these fitting things. I had, I'm not going to say who I went with, but I had bought some clubs twice in the Chicago area, and let's have a fitting. We have the fitting, and those clubs look like they fit for you. There was no, it wasn't nearly the sophisticated testing that they're doing in Misswood. I hear nothing but good things about that. But I've become a believer. But I think that what has happened, and you touched upon this a bit earlier. I think that the changes around the PGA merchandise show, that's changed everything. That's made fitting a year much more of a evened out over the course of the whole year. It's no longer just a spring thing, and I'm looking forward here, of course, because it's year round golf. Although right now in Florida here it's way too hot, but I'm looking to get once the activity begins more at the club I'm at here. I'm intending to have a real sophisticated fitting out here and really kind of give it more of attention than I have in the past.
Yep. If I can jump in there, Matt, Ed Stevenson here. I've got to ask you. You touched on the technology that you have available to you, and I think I think golfers should realize that if you're going to go see a fitter and invest the time and the money and everything else, it's important to have someone who is knowledgeable like your team is at Mistwood. But also, you talked about the technology for measuring results, measuring outcome. The old saying is true. If you can measure it, you can manage it. And we live in an era now that there's incredible technology for measuring different aspects of the swing, the flight of the ball. Can you touch on a little bit, Matt, at Mistwood, you've got a knowledgeable team, but in addition to the knowledgeable team, what are some of the things that are most important to you? What's the technology you're using to measure the spin rate, and what are you really looking at during a club fitting when it comes to the measurables and the data?
Yeah, so in every fitting we do, we're using TrackMan 4. It measures everything from the player's club head speed, their ball speed. It's measuring launch angles and spin rates that they're getting with every shot. I can see if the player is hitting down on the ball or if they're hitting up on the ball. I can see their club path, what the face angle is. And those are things that, you know, like 20 years ago we couldn't see. I was a fitter for a company back when I was out of college in the, you know, early 2000s, and you know, we hit balls into the net, and I think I had a machine that basically measured club head speed. But for the most part, though, my fitting was just asking a lot of questions, and I had to rely on a lot of the information that the golfer provided for me. And you know, sometimes we know that a lot of golfers we tend to sometimes overestimate how far we can hit the golf ball. You know, we all hit the ball, you know, 290, and but you know, where with TrackMan, I can actually see, and you know, I can actually put an optimizer on and be like, you know, if a player's swinging, let's just say 100 miles an hour, you know, statistically speaking, like the probably about as far as they can hit the ball if they're with a driver would be at about 100 miles an hour, they're probably going to max out at about somewhere between probably about 260 and maybe touch 280 at that point. But probably in that 260, 270 mark would be a really good distance for them. But with TrackMan though, it's really neat that I can see that on every single swing. I can see we can turn on their dispersion and see if the new clubs are, or if you're hitting it more accurately. You know, do you have a tighter grouping downrange versus, you know, your current driver. So there's some really, it really is, club fitting in the last few years, I believe, has really taken off, and there's definitely a science to it. You know, if I have a player, for instance, that's hitting, I had a gentleman earlier this year, he wanted to get fit for a three wood, and his angle of attack, he was hitting 7 to 8 degrees down into it.
Oh, wow.
And with a tree wood that has, you know, most of these clubs now, they're 14, 15, 16 degrees of loft on it. That player hitting that much down into it, they're going to really struggle getting the ball, you know, the proper elevation on it. They're just going to hit low line drives. So in that case, like a player that is, you know, maybe a five wood or a seven wood may actually be the longest fairway wood that they can hit, just because their angle of attack is. And that's also too, like, where I can be like, you know, I can show them this and be like, hey, this may be something you want to take a lesson with, you know, one of our other pros and try to get this figured out. So that way you can actually take advantage of a three wood and, you know, get the distance that your swing speed requires, but your swing speed should be producing. But like, unless you're, you know, but yeah, when a player is swinging that much down onto it, hitting a low lofted fairway wood is going to be very challenging. It's going to be hard. So.
Well, it's amazing. This game is so much fun. This game can be so hard, and especially if you don't have the right tools, and not only right tools in terms of equipment, but right tools to really measure those things in terms of the angle of attack and the ultimately the spin rate and the real distance versus what we think we might hit it makes a big difference. But
absolutely, yep. Well, yeah, and the one thing I would say too, like with the driver, you know, really dialing in your spin rate can make it can literally cause a golfer to hit the ball 20, 30, you know, up to 40 yards farther if we can get that spin rate dialed in. You know, I get a lot of driver fitting sometimes where the player, somebody maybe bought a driver that's, you know, maybe something that's, you know, 6 or 7 years old, and, you know, that it maybe has way too much loft on them, and, you know, they're getting, you know, north of 4,000 RPM of spin, and they're losing a ton of distance because of that spin rate. And if I can get them down even close to 3,000, I mean, of course, it depends on the player, how they're delivering the club and the golf ball. But like, if I can get them down, you know, 1,000 RPM, like that player is going to see a significant gain in how far they hit the golf ball. So it is really cool to use this technology and kind of figure out what every player needs.
Well, Matt, if someone would like to come out and do a fitting at the Misswood Performance Center with yourself or Eric Russell, how do they do that? And tell people where they can learn more about Misswood Golf Club fitting.
So, yeah, if you want to book a fitting with us, you can go on our website. The website would be mpcgolf.com. You can book fittings and lessons through there, and you just you want to make sure that the tab is set. Right now, obviously, we're at the Performance Center at Misswood Golf Club. You want to make sure you select the Performance Center, because I think it defaults right now to the Dome. But select the Performance Center, and it will pull up my schedule and Eric's schedule, and you can book your fitting on the website. Or you can always give us a call. The number here is 815-254-3333, and you can talk to one of us, and we can help you get that fitting booked as well. So,
all right, Matt Carter, thank you very much, and best of luck continued to you and Eric out there for all the great work that you do. I know you got another National Golf Digest Award, and best of luck to you. I'm assuming that you're teeing it up at Flossmoor in the Illinois Open this week, so. Best of luck out there as well, and we look forward to seeing you out at Misswood one of these days real soon.
Sounds good, Rory. Thank you. Thank you, guys.
All right. Thanks, that's Matt Carter. And before we go to our break, we want to hear a little bit more about this week's Illinois Open, and we are going to start by hearing a little bit from Kerry Williams, the executive director of the Illinois PGA, who says the section is thrilled to be playing the Illinois Open at Flossmoor Golf Club this week?
Well, we're thrilled to be hosting this year's Illinois Open at Flossmoor Golf Club. It is a storied competitive site that's hosted major events, brought us champions like Chick Evans in the 1923 U.S. Amateur, and it's a great place where they embrace the tradition of the game but are also looking forward to cutting-edge golf. And we love the PGA General Manager, George Boych, who's also a co-owner, as well as the superintendent's team of Bob Lively and Jeff Cameron. They have literally rolled out the red carpet to us, invested a lot in the maintenance of this facility and getting it ready to host the state championship of Illinois golf. And it's going to be a fun week on a fun golf course, and the best golfer will prevail.
All right, that is Kerry Williams. We'll take our break first, and we're going to be back with Flossmoor Golf Club owner George Goetz right after this. Erin Hills, one of Wisconsin's top public golf destinations and a top 100 rated golf course, is ready to welcome golfers to a championship golf experience. Erin Hills is where you can enjoy walking on the rolling hills of the Kettle Moraine area just northwest of Milwaukee. Erin Hills has already hosted four USGA championships, including the U.S. Amateur and the 2017 U.S. Open. Now, a fifth USGA championship is coming in 2025, and this time it's the ladies' turn when the Women's U.S. Open arrives. It's also one of six U.S. Open courses open for public play. Now at Erin Hills is the 63,000-square-foot putting green, the Drumlin, open for unlimited use for those with a scheduled tee time. While at Erin Hills, you can stay in rooms over the Irish pub or in one of the several cottages right on property. During the warm days of summer, enjoy beverages like a Fescue Rescue or a cold Erin Hills Pilsner. So book your tee times now, because tee times and rooms are going quickly. So book your play and stay by calling Erin Hills at 866-772-4769 or visit erinhills.com. Mistwood Golf Club, located on Renwick Road in Romeoville, is one of the Chicago area's finest public golf facilities, where golfers find a commitment to excellence by the owners, the McWethy family. Mistwood Golf Club, designed and renovated by architect Ray Hearn, is a links-style golf course with 20 sidewall bunkers like those found in Scotland or Ireland. Mistwood has played host to several championships, including the state amateur, and it's the yearly home of the Illinois Women's Open. The driving range and performance center comes with natural grass hitting areas and indoor hitting bays, perfect for lessons, practice, or club fittings. Before or after your round, stop in and enjoy the bar and grill in the performance center or dining in McWethy's Tavern in the main clubhouse. So make your tee times today by calling 815-254-3333 or visit online mistwoodgc.com.
All right, it's a little bit past 10:30. You're tuned in to Golfers on Golf Radio here in studio. I'm PGA professional Ed Stevenson, alongside PGA Life member Bill Berger, journalist Rory Spears, and our fourth is also journalist Len Zeem. And guys, as we were heading into the break, we were hearing from Kerry Williams, the executive director of the Illinois PGA. A lot of excitement about the upcoming Illinois Open, and I think a lot of enthusiasm for the venue this year, Rory.
Yeah, there sure is. And you know what? And we'll hear from him a little later in the show. And Brad Slocum, the championship director in charge of setup, and he is he says he's got a great canvas to work with this week. And one of the people that we have to thank for that is ownership partner and director of golf general manager George Goetz. And George joins us on the line now. George, I'll tell you what, I think a lot of people are anxious to see how this Illinois Open is going to turn out this week at your club, Flossmoor Golf Club, because you and your team have got it set up pretty darn good.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. And yeah, if it would ever stop raining, I think we would get the, you know, the conditions that we wanted, but 3/4 of an inch of rain last night didn't help. But, you know, the weather from here on looks beautiful, and hopefully it'll dry out to, you know, basically show these guys the Flossmoor greens that we like to have on a daily basis.
So George, you know, always exciting to be in tournament prep mode. Of course, Mother Nature, as you just alluded to, needs to cooperate. You mentioned the conditions you wanted. Can we dive into that a little bit further? If Mother Nature was giving you exactly what you wanted and needed, in terms of firm, fast, in terms of the rough, maybe in terms of green speed, what would be the magic formula for Flossmoor to challenge the best golfers in Illinois?
Yeah, so the magic formula, and we kind of try and strive for this on a daily basis to have, you know, when our greens get measured at 7:30, we like them to be anywhere from 12.5 to 13.5. And then, you know, the firmness of the greens, which, you know, only the weather can control, is we like to have that first hit thud, you know, kind of like you like to hear about in the U.S. Open. So that's kind of what we strive for, where, you know, we're hoping that everybody has to pay attention to every shot. And so you're not just bombing and gouging and hitting these little wedges that just plug. You know, you have to pay attention and give every shot a little bit of a thought and a little bit of roll. And so that is kind of how we tried to set up the golf course. And again, with all the rain, hasn't really gotten there. It was a week ago, but so that was our goal, you know, moderate to long rough and strategic places, but, you know, green somewhere in that 13 to 14 on the stimp meter.
Well, George, I know that Flossmoor has a great mix of some longer holes. You've got a par 5 that can play about 620 or so, and you've got a couple of shorter par 4s and a par 3 that, you can still be very testy for the players in the field this week. And I know it's a large field at 168 players, but I think all of them, regardless of whether they're professional or amateur, are going to be pretty well tested.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, you know, the senior open qualifier, one under, was low. You know, the pro scratch a couple months ago, five under, was low with a better ball. So, you know, this golf course, you know, definitely can show its teeth. I think it will. It might take till Tuesday or Wednesday. But whoever, you know, plays well and wins is going to have to, you know, keep the ball in the fairway and strategically put the balls below the pin. Because if you don't, you're just constantly playing defensive. So I think probably the guys who are, you know, considered the favorites, whoever probably is a really good, accurate wedge player and an iron player, probably is going to have one of the better shots to win.
George, I'll tell you what, I want to get the longtime veteran reporter of Illinois Opens in the mix here. Len Zeem, what do you got for George in regards to this week's Illinois Open at Flossmoor?
Well, you know, this is an interesting situation. Flossmoor's got a rich golf history. It's been, you know, the host of hosted a lot of big events. I'm kind of wondering here, 168 players. That's a big field. That's bigger than a regular PGA Tour stop. But so you obviously have the numbers of players there. What do you think the numbers are going to take to win this one? Do you have any feel for that?
Yeah, when it was firm, I really thought somewhere, you know, 7 to 9 under would win. With the water we've got, I've kind of moved it to 8 to 12, to be honest with you. If we get some wind, which always is a huge factor, and it dries out, you know, I think it could go back to that, you know, 6, 7, 8 under. But, you know, these guys are just so good and hit it so far that, you know, with the wetness and the humidity, you know, I just think there's just too many good players, and I really think someone has the ability to shoot, you know, 4 under, 4 under, 4 under.
George, it's exciting. Always tournament golf. I think anyone who plays, you know, certainly can relate to the excitement, especially when it's at a venue that you know. And I've got to imagine that for your membership, they've got to be thrilled to be the host venue for the state, the championship here in Illinois for the Illinois Open. But it's a big commitment too, and we know how much demand there is for time. These summers go by far too quickly. So maybe talk a little bit about the commitment of hosting an event like this, and what the hosting event means to your membership.
Well, it means a lot. You know, I'll give you a great example. I released an email with the volunteer list on Wednesday, and by Thursday at noon, it was filled up.
Wow.
So that kind of, to me, says everything about just the enthusiasm and the support, you know, from these people who, you know, we've all
you know, brought in over the last 4 years. When we bought the club, we only had 89 members, and I'm up to 274 members. So, and they're just very enthusiastic, very grateful for the product. And, you know, they couldn't be happier for us to be showcasing the place that they're very proud of. And so am I.
Yeah, well, congratulations. That says a lot. And I'm sure they'll be watching closely. And even if conditions do allow lower numbers, I'm sure your membership will want to, on the heels of that event, test their own game as well. Will there be opportunities for your membership to play the course as set up and laid out by tournament director Brad Slocum? Will there be some days coming up where maybe you replicate those pin placements and let your members have at it?
No, I would never allow my members to play a course that Brad set up. That is
perfect answer.
I have to get my Brad dig in, just so you know. Brad and I are good friends. So, but yes, actually, we're going to leave the golf course set up on Thursday and Friday so they can play it exactly the way it was set up.
George, I know you told us yesterday at the press conference that you're into year four of your five-year plan to sort of bring Flossmoor back. And I know that you've had architect Ray Hearn out there as well, involved in some of the changes. But what are some of the things that you've done to sort of rescue Flossmoor that was struggling right as COVID was showing up at the front door, and get it turned around the way you have?
Well, one of the things that, you know, when I looked at this with my partners and when we decided what direction to go in, as I mentioned yesterday, I didn't want to be a tweener. And, you know, this club's never going to compete with Olympia. They're just a monster. So why do that? I didn't want to be a lower level club, so I focused on being a golf centric club, and that's what we are. We are a golf club trying to attract golfers, right, of every age, everything, that just people who really just want to work on their game, play golf, compete. I like to say, have a beer and a burger and go home, right? This is not the place for Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny. We are a golf club, and it's really worked well, and the people that have joined get it. You know, as I tell people, I didn't need 3,000 people. I needed 300. So I thought it was an easy sell, and it hasn't been easy, but, you know, we set out with a direction, and we don't deviate. We stuck to it, and it's worked well.
Well, George, I know one of the questions that I brought up yesterday, and based on the comments you made and some of the thoughts that Brad Slocum had about the golf course and the way you can set it up, it seems like Flossmoor would be an outstanding venue for any one of the four Illinois PGA section major championships, and not just at the the lower level, but even for the senior guys that are out there as well. Is there any chance that you give the Illinois PGA at some point down the road a chance to come back and bring another one of the majors there?
Yeah, absolutely. I hosted the Senior Open a couple of years ago when it got rained out. Brett and I are in discussions about, you know, what event to host maybe on a permanent level. Me being a senior, I obviously probably would be more attracted to, you know, the Section Senior Championship or the Senior Open. But this golf course could be played as easy, as hard as you really want to set it up. I personally think this is a perfect ladies U.S. Open golf course. You know, that's, to me, the distance and the way it's set up. It's done for that. But again, like you said, you grow the rough up here and get the greens firm and 14. This is a hard golf course for anybody at any level. And matter of fact, this morning I have three guys from the Corn Ferry out here who missed the cut, and they love coming here. They played here last week with me, and, you know, they just are thrilled when the greens are this fast and this firm, because they don't get to see it on a regular basis. So, yeah, I think, you know, I know, because I have such a good relationship with Brad, that I'll be hosting something pretty much every year, every other year, to help the section.
Well, George, tell us a little bit about the stretch drive. Obviously, with the holes you have at 15, 16, 17, and 18, I got to believe that's where the tournament's going to be decided on Wednesday. And what makes those holes so unique? They have a lot of different characteristics to them.
Yeah, it's true. It is a great finishing stretch. And, you know, really 14 is your last true easy birdie hole. 18, even though it's a reachable par 5, can play very difficult if you don't hit two good shots. But, you know, 17, as I like to say, is the easiest par 5 in America, which is the hardest par 4 you'll ever play, especially if it's into the wind. It's just a hard tee shot, hard second shot, you know, great green. And I think whoever plays that little stretch there, an even par for the week, is probably going to be the winner. And, you know, someone's going to have to hold on with the lead on those four or five holes because anything can happen. So that's what makes it fun. And, you know, like I said, as come Wednesday, if it dries out, Brad will get pretty interesting with the pins, which I think he's going to taunt people to try and go for stuff they maybe should not. And, you know, I look forward to seeing that, to be honest with you. So I think it'll be an exciting finish.
Well, George, I'll tell you what you already know. Looking at the extended forecast, we've got sun tomorrow, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So, right, I think, as you just mentioned, probably with each and every day, we'll be getting a little drier, a little firmer, and going back towards where we started in this conversation, towards that formula for the conditions you're looking for to challenge the state's best players. So I know we're excited to see what happens, and really congratulations to you. I think the turnaround story at Flossmoor is an amazing one, and I think your 274 members have a lot to enjoy at a golf-centric club, and even though they'll have their clubs out of their hands for a few days coming up here, it'll be a thrill for them to return to the course and get the opportunity to deal with some of Brad's creativity and setup.
Well, I appreciate that, and again, they're good people, happy to have them here, and they're very appreciative, and I thank you guys for your support of the section and golf in general.
Well, George Goetsch, owner of and general manager and head golf professional of Flossmoor Golf Club. George, we look forward to seeing you this week during the Illinois Open, and we're going to hope that weather holds for you and your team and all the players out there, and that we have some exciting drama and finish on Wednesday when the championship for the state comes down the stretch. Thanks for jumping in this morning.
Oh, no, thank you, guys. Have a great weekend.
All right, yeah, you too. All right, that's George Goetsch, the owner of Flossmoor Golf Club, and I got a chance to talk with Championship Director Brad Slocum yesterday, and he had a couple of different thoughts on things, and we are going to hear a little bit from him as he talks about tournament setup and what the players are going to face this week.
Yeah, we have a great canvas here. We're really excited from tee box locations to hole locations. We have lots of different ways to give guys different shots into these greens. The classic architecture did a great job of giving guys different shots. The par fives all play different lengths. There's multiple options for short par threes out there, and you have all different lengths of par fours. So we are going to be able to move some things around, fronts of greens, backs of greens, over bunkers, tee boxes to really challenge them and give them a different look and to definitely make them earn it, I think, all the way around.
Well, we're going to hear a little bit more from Brad, and he talks about the challenge of what these players are going to see coming down the stretch in the final holes at Flossmoor.
The finish here is fantastic. Yeah, 16, straight par 4. We have a tee box that we can use that's actually shared with that 14th hole that we can use from about 450, depending on wind direction. The regular tee box is about 425. And if we have it into a stiff wind somehow out of the north, we could play it up at 410 and try to get everybody to hit it into that same place. That green is not one of the smaller greens on the course, but the usable area for a hole location is really only in the back half of that green. So you're going to have to really control a wedge in there up a hill and hit a good shot in there, but to a blind surface that you can't see, which is always more difficult to really gauge and feel where you're going. It's a birdie opportunity if you hit two good shots, but it can be one that if you just miss that second shot, you're really struggling to make get up and down to make par. Walking off that green, you walk right into the hardest hole in the golf course. You got a 490-yard par 4 with a creek that goes through at 300 yards with some rough that you don't want to be in on either side or through the fairway before that creek. So you have to have a controlled tee shot to have 190, to have 210-yard shot up a hill to a relatively flat green, but one that you're going to have to hit a good shot into. If you do need a birdie, that's a tough look at trying to generate a birdie down the stretch. And then 18 is a classic risk reward par five. You have to hit the fairway there. The staff here with our tutelage has done a nice job of growing out the rough to the right of that hole. It's going to be some of the thickest stuff on the golf course. The goal is to make sure that if you're coming down the stretch and you bleed it a little bit of the right off that tee, you're not going to be able to go after the green in two. So it's going to be crucial to hit that fairway. And then from there, you're going to have a choice of what you need to do from 200 to 220 yards, depending on the conditions, of trying to get that ball on an elevated green and avoid one of the several bunkers around that green, or get it in there and have to make a great up and down to one of the crowned greens on the golf course. So down the stretch, you're going to have to really earn it, specifically 17 and 18, and really have to hit two good ones to have a chance on 16 too.
All right, that's Brad Slocum, the championship director for the Illinois PGA. He'll be setting up the golf course this week. And Len Billy, as I talked to him, he's, believe it or not, in spite of all the other great holes there, he's really interested to see how 14 plays. And the players may get a little bit of a surprise on a few different holes, including the 14th. And that's one that Brad said he's interested in seeing how the scoring works there. You can play that hole at about 335 from the other side of the creek, so to speak. And or you can play it from a front tee in front of the creek at about 280, and that might happen on Wednesday. So it'll be interesting to see if the guys go for it. But with the slopes in that green and the bunkering, it's going to be quite a challenge. And I also know that the 560-yard par 5 ninth hole, well, a new tee has been added back in the corner of what used to be some high fescue weeds, and those who make the cut might find it at 6:25 or 6:30 on Wednesday morning when they come in for the final round.
Whoa. Well, I know when we think about competitive venues, we often think about how length challenges some of the better players, but really listening to Brad Slocum talk about some of the strategy of tournament setup, you got to realize the thoughtfulness that goes into it. The course that maybe and play week in and week out might really not be quite the same course, not just from where tees are placed, but pin placements make a big difference, and there's a lot of thought and strategy that really goes into making these venues a test of golf.
Len, any Illinois Opens stand out to you as one of the ones that maybe had the most exciting finish or drama to it over the years?
Well, I tell you, I think that the one that I'll remember the best was at the Glen when Patrick Flavin was had won the state amateur and was going for the, I believe it was 2017, going to be sweep them in the same year. That was awfully good. And then when TK Kelly won at the at Stonebridge, that was a one. He was a very dominant player then. The Illinois Open has had some real good players. It's interesting. The Korn Ferry Tour stop has had three of them in the field: Patrick, Brad Hopfinger, and Vince India all played or are playing at the Glen this week, and they were Illinois Open champions. So that and they happened didn't do so well there, but Flossmoor it's going to be a different kind of venue for them. Flossmoor, as I said before, it has a good tournament history, but it's been a while that it had a tournament as big as this one. So it'll be interesting to see how the best players in Illinois fare out there.
It will be, Len. It's always fun and always special, and really enjoying the Flossmoor story. And, this is the 74th Illinois Open. Billy, you've been around Illinois Opens over the years. Is there a course or venue that sticks out in your mind as a favorite? I might know where your answer is going, but favorite Illinois Open course, Billy, from your time around it?
You know, I'm surprised at all the conversation, like the teaser hole that you could move the tee in the five par. Even mentioning Flossmoor over the years, playing it, they have some super par fours.
Yeah.
They're always tough and hard. So I'm
This could be it. This could be the favorite venue then for it.
That's not going to be, you know, it's being on the wet side a little. Sure, you can bomb the ball, but, you know.
Still going to be a test, isn't it?
A couple of yards. But par fours are great there. That's one of the best par fours total that you can find on a golf course.
Absolutely. And you know, you mentioned the performance of some Illinois players in the NV5. Guys, I've got to mention, if we look at where the PGA Tour is this week, and the 3M, we see our Illinois players. We see Doug Gim at, I think, in 23rd place right now. And we see Nick Hardy just outside of the top 10 and off to a hot start. Illinois' very own Kevin Streelman. And guys, it was great to see earlier this week, and I'm president of the Illinois Junior Golf Association right now. Kevin Streelman and his wife Courtney basically sponsored and underwrote an event we hosted on Monday and Tuesday at both Old Wayne and Cantini. Kevin Streelman was there in person. He spent the day, part of the day Monday and Tuesday, but a lot of the day Monday, where he was on the course, his kids teed off. He was at a pizza party at the end of the, as players came off the course from day one. And he was going to sit around and talk to some of the players, the young men and women, for maybe half an hour, answer some questions. Well, he spent the better part of 3 hours or more sitting at Cantini and having just one-on-one conversations, group conversations, fireside chat style. Of course, these young competitive golfers asked him everything. And Tuesday, he headed up to Minnesota to go get ready and play in the event. But an interview that took place yesterday on Golf Channel, Kevin was asked what he attributed his fast start to in the tournament. He was 10 under, tied for third going into the weekend. He said he got a boost. He was reinvigorated by the purity of being around these kids and reminded him of the joy of competing in golf. And I got to say, love that. Love hearing that. And it's true. You could see his sincerity, his engagement with those kids. I know he gave them a boost, and glad to hear he got one too.
Yeah, that just sounds great. One other question that I had at yesterday's press conference. And Brad Slocum didn't go into a lot of detail because he says talks are really in the beginning stages. But there is a club in the North Shore that is spearheading a movement to be part of a rotation for the Illinois Open that would include perhaps 7 or 8 clubs in the area that have done a good job with the tournament or want to be a part of this tournament. And part of the plan would be that these clubs would help host the club that is hosting the championship that year, help host their members that week so they have something to play. There'd be a real reciprocal between all of these clubs so that more clubs are willing to step up and host the Illinois Open in the future and also willing to bring it to some of the better venues in the Chicagoland area. So it'd be interesting to see if they can pull that off. But it's one thing that's definitely on the drawing board out there, and we'll have to see how that goes.
You know what, Rory? We don't have the ace of the hole anymore. In the old days, when you couldn't find a golf course to play and everything, you always had Joe Jemsek calling for you. And Uncle Joe, he'd throw number 4 at you, or yeah.
That's a good point.
And sometimes number 2 would... You know, some of those U.S. Open qualifiers, you know, number 2 was no cakewalk, you know. So,
some good courses out at Cog Hill.
But old Joe, he'd bail them out. He'd bail us out, you know.
Well, speaking of bailing out, we're going to have to bail out on the clock here, Billy. We're out of time. We're going to tap out. Thank you for joining us for another week of Golfers on Golf Radio. Thanks to our producer, Brian. Of course, our guests. You can catch us online during the week at golfersongolf.com to hear from our very own Rory Spears. But on behalf of Len Zeem, Bill Berger, Rory Spears, I'm Ed Stevenson. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. We'll be back next week.
Preceding program, Golfers on Golf, was paid for by Rory Spears Sports Communications Limited and guests.